You're listening to Authorpreneurs Unleashed with host Catherine McClatchy, demystifying the business of writing. Are you an author looking to take the next step in your career or maybe pivoting into a completely new direction? Are you wondering how that might affect your brand messaging? Then this episode is for you. Take some inspiration and expert advice from two authorpreneurs, our own Catherine McClatchy and Lynn Gladner, a writing coach, marketing entrepreneur, and host of the Make Meaning podcast. Listen as they discuss their own career pivots and ideas to consider as you incorporate brand messaging and marketing into your own platform.
Hello, authorpreneurs. This is Catherine McClatchy coming back again to talk with Lynn Gladner. And Lynn is doing a lot of the same things I'm doing. So I am really excited to get another perspective. Lynn has her own podcast that she has been doing since 2018. She is an author. She is a past journalist, and she also has a business with marketing and messaging. And, boy, it sounds like we've been on a similar trajectory. So I'm really excited. We're going to talk about career pivoting because we've both done quite a bit of that. And we're also going to talk about branding and brand messaging as authors are setting up their goals for 2024. Can you believe we're at the end of the year? This seems like a good time to revisit some of those things and make sure we're on track for the next year. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to be here.
Well, let's start out easy. We both obviously love books and authors. So what are you recommending everybody read these days?
Oh, my goodness. If you
other than your own book, we're going to talk about that.
Please, everybody read Woman of Valor. I would love it. You know, I have, if you could see my in my house, there are stacks of books to be read in two rooms. And I keep thinking I'm whittling it down, but then I keep buying books, which is crazy. And so that doesn't help the matter at all. But I will say, I just finished two books by friends that I loved. One was Lisa Peer's, Love at 350 Degrees. The other one is Rochelle Weinstein, What You Do to Me. And both, I just couldn't stop reading. I just kept, you know, going and not doing anything else responsible during the day so I could get through them. So they're both really good books.
Oh, I love that I'm not the only one who forgets the whole world and focuses in that imaginary world. My own or others.
Yes. Well, that's the mark of a good book is when you can just get lost in it, right?
Right. Can't put it down and, oh, I'm supposed to go to bed at a certain time. And then you realize 4 hours are passed and you pay for it the next day. But yeah, that's a great way to do it. So you're an author too. Mm-hmm. How long have you been writing and how many books have you released?
So my mom says I was 6 years old when I started. So we're going to go with that age. And I do have a couple of journals from my childhood that are behind my desk. And it just reminds me of who I've always been. Woman of Valor is my 9th book. It's my first novel. So I have 6 nonfiction books and 2 poetry collections. And this novel just came out in September. And it's the first of what I hope to be many. So I'm working on getting close to releasing the next one in 2024. So I'm really excited about that.
That is exciting. And that's something we're going to talk about when we get to the branding part of the conversation, because there's so much advice from quote unquote experts that say, pick a lane, stay in your lane, don't get out of your lane. So obviously you're not following that advice either, and neither am I. So that's of interest. And then, so writing so many books, what rituals do you have? I love learning about everybody's process.
You know, it's funny, Catherine, I just pivoted back to focusing solely on my writing about 5 years ago. And so, so 8 books came out while I was doing other work things. I was a journalist. I have a marketing company. I still do. But when that was my main focus, so the books I wrote were kind of on the side. And so now what I'm doing is I'm really focusing on my writing first and foremost. And then I coach authors. I teach writing classes. I have marketing clients. But that I'm putting that more to the side, and the writing being an author is primary. So that ritual really just began a few years ago when I started to focus. And what I do is I start my day with writing. So I wake up, I usually make tea and I read for a while because I like to read before I write, just to get sort of into that mode.
Oh.
And then and I do that for about an hour. And then I spend 3 to 4 hours working on my own writing. And then I'll either exercise or do something to sort of transition the time. And then I get into other work. So everything else is in the afternoons. Sometimes of the year, I might exercise in the morning and sort of fit it around my writing. But when I write, I have low lighting. I have some favorite candles that I'll light. I have certain playlists that I'll listen to. And that's all sort of to set the mood and make it a different setting than when I'm doing client work later in the day.
I totally understand that. So I'm curious, are you an actual morning person or do you write in the morning because it's a priority thing?
I am a morning person. I love to wake up early. And so if I sleep until 7, I feel like I've slept in.
So, oh my goodness.
Yes. I love, and I've been this way for a very long time, but especially when my kids were little, and they're not little anymore, but I would get up before they would get up so that I could have time to write. So I've been doing this now for like more than 2 decades. And, you know, kids get up really early. And so I would get up really, really early and have that time to myself when the house was quiet and everybody was sleeping. And it was just me. And I absolutely cherish that time.
Very interesting. I do the same thing, but on the flip, I'm a night owl.
Okay.
Absolutely a night owl. I do good to get to bed by 4 a.m. So the idea of getting up at 7 just doesn't work for me. But I had one son who was early to bed, early to rise since the womb. I mean, he was playing in utero at 5 a.m., you know, and then my other son is a night owl like me. So I'd put one to bed and take the other grocery shopping after midnight kind of thing. And now they're both out of the house. I'm an empty nester. So, but I know I call one son first thing in the morning and I call the other son before, you know, I go to bed. So it's funny how the kids change your work schedule and patterns.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned being a journalist. You mentioned your other businesses. Tell me a little bit about this trajectory. My career trajectory has been very crooked and it sounds like yours has also.
In a way, they're just sort of evolutions, I think, of the same types of skills.
Okay.
And so I went to the University of Michigan. 3 weeks after graduation, I moved to New York City and I was working as a journalist at a newspaper. After a year, they transferred me to their Capitol Hill Bureau and I worked there for a few years. And then I came back to Michigan, to Detroit in the mid to late 90s. And I worked for newspapers here until I went freelance. And I was freelance for 10 years where I was, you know, supporting my family. But I also, in the meantime, I did an MFA in creative writing, focusing on poetry while I was still in DC. Mm. And my master's thesis was a manuscript of poems that a publisher accepted before graduation. So I came to graduation with a box of books, which was super cool. And
how exciting.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a dream come true, literally. And so when I came back to Michigan, I was teaching college English and writing courses while also being a freelance journalist. And I did that for about 10 years, during which time I got married, I had kids, I got divorced. And so when I got divorced, the economy was upside down, the housing market was crashing, and I had 3 little kids. And my ex-husband's a musician, so you do the math on that. Journalism was changing a lot. So it was out of necessity that I decided to pivot. And I thought, what can I do with the skills that I have, but make sure I can get paid? And so that's where I came up with the idea for the marketing and public relations company. But all the while I kept saying, you know, I'm a writer, but I'm just doing this to earn a living. And I found that I loved it. I mean, I really liked using my writing skills for companies and entrepreneurs and nonprofits and had a really great time with it. And my media skills, you know, pitching me half. And all the while I was writing books on the side just to sort of keep my hand in more of the creative writing. But using my journalistic skills, because nonfiction books are really about interviewing, reporting, research, and all that. Mm-hmm. And so I did all of that. And the company really grew. It was very successful. And but like I said, about 5 years ago, I thought, you know, okay, I'm getting older, you know, we get one life. And so if I say I'm really a writer, when am I going to do that? Like, when am I going to make it my top priority? And that was like before the pandemic. And I was starting to think about how do I strategically plan so that I can still earn income, but my writing can be my first focus. And so I started by getting up at like 5 in the morning to write for an hour. And then I would work all day. And I loved it so much that all of a sudden it was 2 hours. And so I'm like, okay, something really needs to shift. And so I made a plan to really reduce my client load and keep like two bread and butter incomes that were going to give enough income that I had that freedom. And I gave bigger clients notice, like six-figure clients, that I said, you know, by this date, I'm not going to work with you anymore. And so I gave them a lot of lead time, but I gave myself lead time, because then, you know, I could really plan and start to teach more, or start to work with authors as, you know, coaching. And so by the time I let go of those clients and I pivoted, I changed my days. So I didn't want to get up at 5. So I started writing at 7, and I would go for 3 or 4 hours, and then I would do all the client work or the teaching or whatever, and just made the shift. And so that's really the trajectory, and it's been great. And I remember about a year into it, and I was sitting at the desk, and I was like, I'm here. This is what I planned for. And wow, like what a cool feeling, like all this planning, strategy, thinking it through, crunching numbers. And then I was there, and it was like, I was just patting myself on the back. Like, how cool, you know?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Kudos to you. So
this,
as people are listening, this is important to what we're going to talk about, because having these changes, you also coach authors on how to do those career pivots.
Yes.
And, this is something that you're passionate about. And this is something I wanted to talk about, because I have a lot of clients I'm coaching that come to me going, how do I transition from one to the other? My transitions were a little more forced. I didn't have time to plan them. I was a college professor one day. I was in stroke recovery the next day.
Oh.
I had to figure out what to do with my life, you know.
Yeah.
So, and my journalism background, I started out actually in marketing. I was doing ad sales, and I had been writing since I was a kid too. And something came up. They didn't have someone to cover a story. They threw me a camera and said, go.
Wow.
And I started writing. So I did journalism for about a year or so, enough to know it was not for me. I really enjoyed the sales side. And then that pivot, because my husband changed jobs and we moved. So all of my pivots have been, like I said, forced. Yours were planned. So I want to know from you how you coach folks to make a more sane transition than I did.
Yeah. So a lot of it is confidence building. And that is very common in my writing classes too. I work with a lot of women at midlife. And so it's sort of like, I never had the courage to do what I really wanted to do, but it's been nagging at me my whole life. And I want to do it, but I'm afraid, because all these other voices, you know, from parents and teachers and spouses and whomever, you know, why would you focus on writing? You can't make a living at writing, blah, blah, blah. And so it's building the confidence first, and then building a very specific plan. So, you know, okay, I want to write. Well, what does that mean? You know, that seems too overwhelming. It's too amorphous. So do you want to write books? Do you want to write essays and have them be published? Are you writing op-eds for newspapers? You know, like what exactly is it? And then setting goals. And so, but then also setting up a support system so that you can, you know, really work toward success instead of sabotaging yourself. And so that might be being part of a writer's community, or taking classes, or, you know, having a writing coach or something, critique partners, all of that. So it's really getting down in the details about, you know, what specifically do you want to be doing? What do you need? So we do talk about money a lot. You know, money, not as something to be uncomfortable with, but something that is energy and it needs to go back and forth. And so we talk a lot about that.
I'm so glad you're bringing that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a conversation that not enough people are having, and not enough women are having, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people are so afraid of talking about money. Women, especially, they underprice themselves. I do it. And I'm like, why did I do that? It's so many years I've been, you know, trying not to. And so it's talking about, you know, when you look at numbers, it actually empowers you in so many ways. So like, I need X amount of dollars just to cover my costs. So where am I going to bring that from? Oh, well, actually these two clients bring me more than I needed. So cool. I have that freedom. And if I have additional clients, then, you know, I am just in, you know, really, I have freedom. I have extra things I can do. When it comes to numbers for the writing, set a goal. Like I, a couple of years ago, said, I want 9 essays this year to be published. So, cause I write a lot of creative nonfiction, and that means that you have to write the 9 essays, then you have to submit them. And so like building your schedule so that you have the writing time, but also the submission time, the business of writing time. And that year, I think I published 12 essays. So So because I set the number at 9, that was the goal and I exceeded it, but it's something that was manageable. It's not like I wanted to publish 100 essays, which I don't think I could do in a year, you know? So it's getting really practical about what it is you want to achieve and then filling in the steps you need to take to get there, whether it's monthly or weekly or daily, but getting really, really specific is how we actually achieve those goals. It's the same thing with writing books. So, you know, I want to write a book a year for the rest of my career. So how do I set myself up so I can do that? And it's really coming up with a plan and a strategy so that you can achieve it.
So it sounds like the first goal is looking at budget. What do you need to live?
Yep.
And then figuring out, okay, I have to sell or I have to coach or I have to do so many things to achieve that number. Mm-hmm. And then we break down the calendar to make sure your calendar is in alignment with those goals and needs.
Yes, but I actually think the first step is confidence building, is believing in yourself enough that you can do this, that you should spend your time on this, you know, trying to decide which voices you listen to. And so once you do that and you know, like, okay, I want to write a book or I want to write essays or whatever it is, making that your priority, but then also having the practical conversation about funding your life and building a schedule that has both. So it's just important to look at the realistic and the belief. I think both need to go hand in hand.
And you mentioned getting a support group around you, convincing family, friends, whomever, that this is what you're going to do. And that is really challenging too. So I think that's part of the mindset, because if you don't believe in your goal, you're not going to convince anyone else to believe in your goal.
Well, and I do think that other people don't have to believe in your goal, but I think you need to remove from your close circles anybody who is going to be a negative energy on you. And so if there's somebody who's just really, you know, down about the possibility for your writing, maybe you don't want to spend as much time with them. And so maybe you need to build a community of writers around you, you know, whether it's, like I said, taking a class or going to events where you're going to find other writers that you could write with on Zoom, or you could check in with and say, okay, what are you doing this week to move towards your goal? You know, just so that you can cheer each other on, because you do need to surround yourself with people who lift you up instead of hold you down.
Yeah, exactly. So Unleashing the Next Chapter has a writing creative community. And every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central, we do either co-working, sprints, online workshops, you know, whatever, to have that community. Do you offer something like that for your clients, your group?
Yeah, that's wonderful that you do that. I offer an accountability cohort, which is every Monday for 90 minutes. And it's really to come together and hold each other accountable, but get your own work done. And we start with a meditation. I do give prompts, but most people work on their own projects during that time. And we set a goal for the time. We fill each other in on whether we achieved it or not. And then we set a goal for the week ahead. I also offer something called the Writers Community, which is a 12-month program where you have to apply and be at a certain level of writing. And then we meet twice a month for 2 hours at a time to do writing coaching, writing instruction, co-writing together, but also critiquing. So you have a smaller group within that bigger group that is your critique partners. And so you submit your writing every month and get feedback from them and from me. And it's just It's a wonderful network. It's evolved over time. I started it, I think, 3 years ago. And it was month to month at first. And then I did 6-month cohorts. And now it's a 12-month commitment. And it's a bigger group with small groups and within it. And I've had some of the same people in it for 3 years. It's been amazing.
Very cool. So if anybody listening is interested, they can find that through which of your websites?
So lynngolodner.com. There's a tab that says Write with Lynn, and it is there. And they will also find a free monthly write-along that I offer under write-alongs. And it's just show up on Zoom either a Saturday or Sunday each month and write in community. And so that's just a way to dip your toe in the waters, and it's free. So it's a nice way to see friendly faces and do some writing with other people on the screen. And it just holds the space for you.
And to find friends with similar interests. So yes. I find that has become more challenging as we've become more of an online society in a lot of ways. You know, I know a lot of the groups pre-pandemic that met in person no longer do that. And it's a little bit harder to find people.
Yes, it is. It's harder, but it's also easier. So like, I find that there are so many programs that popped up during the pandemic that made use of Zoom. So, and some of them have continued. So like the London Writer Salon out of London, they have, I think it's 4 times a day that you can join them to write for an hour. They're different time zones. So theoretically, you could do it 4 times a day if you wanted to. And they have other programs too, but it's global and it's so beautiful that they just kept going and they get like 200 people a time. It's really nice.
I love that. I'm going to have to check that one out. Yeah, I set everything that we're doing for Unleashing at 2 p.m. because I figured that across the globe, the majority is awake at that time. Because I had clients in Australia and I had clients in England and Amsterdam and, you know, the West Coast and the East Coast. And, you know, I just sat down with one of those world clock things and said, okay, what time is everybody awake? Here's what we're doing.
You are so smart because I've had clients in Australia as well, but I also have them in like Germany and Israel and England and whatever. And I hadn't figured out a time that would work. And so, that's so interesting. I'm going to have to think about that. I usually do like my ride alongs are at 11 a.m. Eastern. And so West Coast certainly can do it. But Australia, not so much, but Europe definitely. So it's really tough. I'm so impressed that you figured it out.
It is. I started out trying to do for me like a morning and an evening kind of thing, trying to catch them. And then it ended up being very separate communities. And I wasn't real keen on that because I really wanted everybody to have a chance to connect and to learn from each other and different perspectives and different voices. So that's when I sat down with World Clock. So you might definitely benefit from that.
I'm going to check it out. Thank you so much.
Sure. So we have lots of tips for changing direction, for evolving careers, as you said. And honestly, that's pretty much what mine did. So let's segue into the marketing. I noticed you have your 4 different websites and they all have different branding. So was that a conscious or unconscious choice? Would you recommend that? I've kind of kept all of my, Unleashing the Next Chapter is kind of an umbrella for the 5 things that I focus on. And so I have one set of like colors and fonts, but like my community goes more of the greens and my business goes more of the purples just so I can set it up, but they all intermix. Yours are completely different though.
Well, Your People, which is my marketing company, and the Make Meaning podcast have similar colors in the branding. And so that's the same color palette. And that was just because I wanted the podcast to somehow relate to it. Although, as you know, the business now is working on marketing for authors and coaching authors to learn marketing and build their brands. The Make Meaning podcast now is all about authors and people in publishing. Scotia Road Books is the hybrid press that I started this year. That branding is definitely different colors. And I don't know if I have a reason as to why I should. There was a reason at the time, but I don't know. I guess it could be. I think I'm getting sick of the other colors, and so I was looking into some new colors, you know. And Lynn Galadner, I don't really have a brand for me at this moment. You know, it's black and white pretty much on my website, and just to make it basic so everything else pops. And Woman of Valor is very much this teal turquoise color. So I try to sort of match that in the branding of like my media kit and things like that. But the next book, I think the cover design will be in the same style as Woman of Valor, but the colors may be different. So, and I do need to work on sort of some kind of physical representation of the author brand, which I haven't done yet because I've just been so busy launching a book and getting all this stuff going. So it's like on my to-do list, like do those author business cards, but I just haven't done it and have to get around to it at some point.
there's only so many hours of the day, so you got to prioritize, right?
Yes.
But you talk about, you know, your marketing company does deal with branding also, mm-hmm. right? Because that's part of the messaging.
Yes.
I've been trying to educate my followers that there's a difference between brand design, brand strategy, and branding marketing, right? They all dovetail together, but they're separate. Do you start with the design or the strategy?
So it depends when somebody comes to us. If they want me to start helping them with their brand, then we'll start there. So it could be, you know, even their URL or their name or how they're known or whatever, and then the messaging and then the physical representation of the brand as well. And then the strategy comes next. But if they already have an author brand, then we'll just dive right in and, you know, we'll talk about what is their strategy for their author career. So I don't necessarily look at just one book and marketing that book. I look at what are your goals as an author, you know, for your career, and how does this book fit into it? And what's now and what's future? And we want the strategy to be replicable for additional books and, you know, future events and, you know, opportunities. So I want to understand that bigger picture in order to get into the details for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I do the same thing. I encourage my authors to build an author brand mm-hmm. and then we sell books under that author brand
yeah.
rather than I think a lot of publishers two decades ago, they were focused on marketing the book
yeah.
and branding the book mm-hmm. and the author kind of went by the wayside. So I think that's a luxury as an indie, that you can set that up. And I'm noticing a lot of publishing companies are switching over to that too. So
yeah. I think a lot of publishing companies want to understand the life of the book as well as the career. So, you know, I know an author mm-hmm. in Nova Scotia, I spent part of this summer there as a writing sabbatical. And there's an author that I met who has several books out. And she's older in years. And she said, I can't get anybody to pick up my third book. And she said, you know, part of it is that her age, she feels like she's not writing another book. This is the last one. And the other part mm-hmm. was she said, I don't want to do the marketing. I'm not going to be involved in it. And I don't think that's acceptable anymore in the publishing space. I think publishers want to see that the author is invested too, and that there's an author brand as opposed to just this one book, because how can they make money on just one book? You know, they want to ride the journey of the author.
I agree. And what I've also found is I've got a lot of traditionally published authors who are coming to me saying, my publishing company doesn't do marketing.
Yeah.
They told me that's my responsibility. I don't want to do that. How do I hire you?
Yeah.
So, there's definitely options, but I like, if an author doesn't have their branding already figured out, I start with the strategy mm-hmm. and then come up with the visual representation. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think we're on the same page. You know, it's a really interesting dynamic mm-hmm. figuring out the branding and how it represents the author. And all of us are multi-passionate, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different themes that show up in what we write, and there's different things that, you know, for you having the poetry as well as the nonfiction, as well as the fiction and the essays and all that, how do you create a brand that encompasses all of that? So it definitely has to be an author brand, right?
Yes. Well, I will answer that question very clearly because, you know, I do write creative nonfiction essays, but I don't anymore do nonfiction books, and I'm not looking to do poetry collections. So when it comes to books, it's just fiction. Unless I do a collection of my essays that have been published and I want to, you know, put them all together. But I will mm-hmm. say that I was very deliberate in my author brand because I took a look at what am I doing going forward with the fiction, but what have I done already? And so if you look at my past books, there are themes. And so much of it centers on my identity as a Jewish woman, as a strong Jewish mm-hmm. woman. And so my author brand is I craft compelling Jewish characters who fill their lives with passion, purpose, and love. And so, you know, I'm very dedicated to having that Jewish identity as a part of my stories. So even when I'm writing essays, you know, that's who I am. And it's definitely essential to, so even if I'm writing about like swimming or food, you know, that identity comes into it in some way. And certainly in my novels, the first one, Woman of Valor, is very, it's a very religious novel. It's a religious Jewish character, main character, who's in the Orthodox world. However, tons of people who are not Jewish have read it and loved it because it introduced them to a world they didn't know. So it's like, you know, going to another country or whatever. But like the next novel, it's not about Orthodox Judaism in any way. But Jewish identity is still there for a couple of the characters. And so that is a theme that I'm continuing throughout my writing, because it's important to me. And also because I think that we need more books that have positive Jewish identities and Jewish community representation. I mean, we're a tiny percentage of the world, but a lot of people are really preoccupied with us. So I'd like to put some positive stories out there. And my daughter said to me, she said, "Are you really set on that? Because you might have a wider audience if you expanded it." And I said, "I am really set on that. And I still think I'll have a wide audience. And I do think I will." So that's how I put it all together under one big brand.
I love it. I love it. And that's exactly what I talk to people with marketing. You have to have that target audience, and then you'll start collecting everybody around your target. But if you market to everybody, or you write something you think everybody will love, it ends up being watered down and it hits nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny because for my book tour, I am really focusing on reaching out to Jewish communities, but also universities and book clubs and things like that. But Jewish communities, because it's kind of a no-brainer, you know, it's like, of course there would be interest. Ironically, not Orthodox communities for this book. I don't think they want me to speak, but I think they'll read it. I just don't think they'll admit it. Cause you know, it's a little bit scandalous in some ways. You know, I'm really focused because I think I can have more, reach in a very narrow community than if I'm trying to get everybody, you know? And so like, for example, I'm doing a bunch of talks in California in February, and there's a university that's bringing me in to talk about strong women's identities right before Women's History Month. There's a synagogue that's bringing me into their book club. And then there's a client of mine who is not Jewish, who is a culinary entrepreneur, and she's hosting a big book launch event for me at a restaurant that she invests in, who's owned by a Jewish chef. And we're going to have a conversation about Jewish identity. And it's just, you know, at like a very cool, hip restaurant that everyone wants to go to. So there's a theme, but it has expansiveness, which I think is really fun.
I love it. I love it. And I can't wait to read the book. I grew up in Milwaukee, which has a very large Jewish community.
Yeah.
And in Dallas, surprisingly, as I've lived in the Metroplex for most of my married life, huge Jewish community. Yeah. And I don't think people realize that, you know, the stereotype of Texas is, you know, we're all Protestant ranchers kind of thing. So yeah, it's really interesting to see the diversity. And I love that you're focusing on a community that we all need to learn more about.
Yeah.
When you look at, you know, so many of the medical and technological advances, they come from Israel. And, you know, there's so much in, the Nobel Prize winners, I think, if I'm not mistaken, have more Jewish representation than any other country. You know, there's a lot of positive things to be focused on. So I'm thrilled that you're putting that out there.
Well, thank you.
Okay. So you also mentioned that you've changed your branding as your focus changed on what you're writing. So I want to ask about that. If you have clients that are coming to you that need updated branding, when do you recommend, how, when, why do you recommend updating your branding versus overhauling your branding? And did you update or did you overhaul when you changed your focus?
Well, I think, what I normally tell clients is every year you should revisit your messaging and make sure it still holds true. But about every 5 years, you should take a really good look at your branding and decide if it still works for you, if you need to make some major changes. So every year I'm looking at my bio, I'm looking at my website content, I'm making sure that everything still resonates, and I make little tweaks. But every 5 years, I might change the color scheme, or I might decide that I really need to change, you know, a significant focus. And so I may not, but that's when I take a look. So I'd say every 5 years for a major overhaul.
That's very similar to what I'm doing. I tweak and update the messaging, like you said, all the words, the content, every year for sure. And then I look at whether or not the colors need to be updated, tweaked. You know, sometimes the shades start looking dated. So my colors are always purple and green and silver, but the shade might adjust a little bit. Cause I think you want to stay fresh.
Yes. And I sometimes get bored of the colors and I just want to change it, you know? So I think it's important to just see what, you know, what you're feeling, but also what the trends are. You know, some colors go in and out of vogue. And so it's important to stay on top of that as well.
And then the messaging, of course, I think drives it because you've got to make sure your visuals represent what you're doing. So that's, it's not just the colors and the fonts. I just want to reiterate, it's not just that. That's, that represents what you're actually doing. Very, very interesting. Okay. You've already talked about the Women of Valor, but let's be more specific. It's the Jewish strong woman in the themes. What genre is this? It's just published in September, so it's available now. Tell me more.
Okay. So Woman of Valor is a story. It's women's fiction. It's literary fiction. It's, you know, sort of all of that together. It's a contemporary story about a protagonist, Sally, who chooses to become Orthodox in Judaism. She grew up marginally Jewish and just stumbles upon the community in Skokie, Illinois, outside Chicago, and just falls in love. And so she builds this great life. She meets a wonderful man, love of her life, has three kids, everything's groovy. And then one of her kids is abused at school. And so she and her husband both are devastated, but they respond differently in terms of what they want to do. And it causes a rift between them for the first time ever. And around that time, her ex-boyfriend comes back into her life online and says, never should have let you go. That was a big mistake. And so all of this really challenges her commitment to her identity that she so carefully constructed and her community that she is so in love with. And so she really has to decide, you know, who do I want to be? And how can I reconcile everything that I know now? And some people have described it as suspenseful. I mean, there is abuse. There is, it's not graphic abuse, but it's there. And there is infidelity and there is, there's a lot that goes on. And so, but I think that it's resolved nicely. I hope you guys will think that when you read it. People have been riveted. They say that they can't put it down when they read it in 3 days. And some people have even asked for a sequel. So, who knows? Maybe one day.
For those wondering, how would you rate it? PG, PG-13, RX?
There's definitely some sex in this book. They have a very passionate marriage. And I think I write sex pretty well, but it's not, it's not.
It's so nice to see sex in marriage in books. Thank you.
I wanted to. And also because they're a religious couple. So you don't normally think of a very religious couple as this like passionate marriage. And so I wanted to bust that, that myth, you know, like,
thank you.
I mean, yeah.
Thank you.
So, so that was deliberate. There is some sex in there. It's not erotica in any way.
Okay.
There's nothing throbbing. Okay. But, it's, but it's definitely, there's some sex in there. So, if you're looking for a very pristine story, this is not it.
Okay. So it sounds like it's safely in the R zone.
I think so. It's not beyond R, but yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I just know some people, you know, want the very, very clean, very simple, and some people are going for the X. So I always like to clarify that.
Sure.
Okay. Let's talk about your podcast for just a minute. We're coming to the end of our time together. You interview authors, correct?
I do. So that has pivoted as I have pivoted.
Okay.
So I started the Make Meaning podcast in 2018. It was inspired, unfortunately, by a diagnosis for my father of a terminal leukemia. And we didn't know if he'd make it to his 80th birthday. We were very close. And so I started the podcast really to get his stories. And my premise was that I wanted to really interview people about how they find meaning and purpose in work and in life. So the first interview was with my dad, and the podcast aired, debuted on his 80th birthday, and he was there, and we listened to it and cried and everything.
How wonderful.
Yeah. On his 81st birthday, he was back in the studio as another guest, and, you know, was, that was wonderful on the 1 year anniversary. Unfortunately, he died 6 months later. So I still can't listen to those episodes, but they're there for when I'm ready. but it has pivoted over time. So as my work has changed with who I would work with, I would interview different people in those industries. And then when I made this big evolution, I decided to evolve the podcast and just focus on authors and people in publishing. So that's exclusively who I feature now. And I air episodes every other Friday. We have a lot, and I'm probably going to end up taking a hiatus in July of next year to have a break and then come back with like 10 episode seasons after that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I have a lot of great authors.
For the listeners interested, episode 158 of Make Meaning Podcast is actually flipping the switch because somebody interviews you about your book, Women of Valor. So if you want to learn more about the podcast or if you want to learn more about the book, go to episode 158 and we'll put it in the show notes that awesome. Everyone can link to.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Very exciting. Okay. Last three questions I got to ask. What's your favorite tea? I love that you said you started your day with tea.
Yes. Honestly, I'm very boring. I use some of the British black teas. So like Tetley or I'm trying to think of what the other ones are, but I have huge boxes of them and I foam the milk and put that in. So that's usually what I do, but I have like, what is it? I had just bought a pine needle tea, which is interesting. It has like immunity boosting qualities. And I do love pine. Yeah, pine needles. So I'm just trying that out. But I usually start the day with like British black tea. Yeah.
I don't think I've seen pine needle tea. I'm curious now. My go-to is Earl Grey. So ooh, nice. I understand. And the whole British thing that I taught British literature for years. So that's my happy place. Okay. I'm also addicted to plants. Do you have a favorite flower or plant?
I think I'm going to be boring, but the pine tree is my favorite. I actually wanted to name one of my kids the Hebrew word for pine, which is Oren, O-R-E-N. But we had Israeli neighbors across the street from us and they had heavy accents and they did the like guttural R. And so they always called, and they had a son named Oren, but they said Ochen, Ochen. And I'm like, I can't get that voice out of my head. So I can't name a kid Oren. But I love pine trees. I just love the scent of them and I love the way they look. And I love that they are green all year round.
So you're in Michigan. I grew up in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I think of pines. East Texas is known as the piney woods. Mm-hmm. Are there pine trees native to your area?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
It's very much a northern tree and I just love it.
Very cool. Okay. Hardest question for everybody. What's your favorite book? All time favorite.
Okay. I'm going to give you two. I'm sorry, but I really love the Outlander series. I think that even though that's cliche and everybody loves Outlander, I think they're just beautifully written. And so after I finished all the books that were out, I was looking for others that were similar. And I stumbled upon The Wilderness series by Sarah Donati. And it's even better. She is such an amazing writer. It's actually a pen name for Rosina Lippi, and she's become a friend of mine. And those books are so gorgeous. And I can't tell you enough how much I love it. 6 books in The Wilderness series, and they're just phenomenal.
Isn't that great when you find an author you love and become friends?
Yeah.
I've had some similar experiences. There's also the authors that you meet as friends and then, you know, fall in love with their work. But yeah, that's really a cool part of being in this community.
Yes, it is.
Lynn, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your story as well as giving our listeners some tips and tricks. Folks, if you want to learn more about Lynn, you can go to her website, lynnglodner.com. And again, that will be linked in the show notes. Last 1 minute, if people remember nothing else from your time here, what do you want them to know?
Oh my, in 1 minute, I guess, you know what, just your voice matters and you should dare to put it out there. You know, absolutely have confidence in your desire to write because you deserve it. And I want to hear your voice. So put it out there and read Woman of Valor. Go get a copy. Can't wait to hear what you think.
And if you read it, review it. The best thing you can do for authors is to leave reviews.
Yes.
So very cool. Thanks, Lynn. We will talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thanks, Catherine. It's been great to be here.
Check out AuthorpreneursUnleashed.com/podcast for resources, show notes, tips, and more. Make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to give us a rating as well. Join us next episode as I interview Catherine as we discuss restarting. Do you need to restart your project, your career, or maybe even your life in 2024? Catherine has restarted and reinvented herself a number of times due to moves, career changes, and life events, and has meaningful experience to share on this topic.